Good to hear from you, my friend. NCAA tournament action starting. The Hoosiers are getting ready to go. You're getting ready to go to head to Des Moines a little bit later today. Might see some severe weather out that way. Be careful out there, my friend. But that's all right. You'll get there in plenty of time before Thursday night, 7:10 CBS tip-off. It's the 12 seed Chattanooga Mocs and the number 5 Indiana Hoosiers. That'll be game 3 in Des Moines that afternoon, followed by Kentucky and Stony Brook, which Indiana fans will have one eye on, obviously, after the conclusion of that 7:10 game. Des Moines Arena holds 16,000 people. What are they going to do with Kansas, Kentucky, and Indiana fans there? Everybody going to they going to set up some big screens on the street so people can watch? How is that going to work out?
Yeah, so something tells me the tickets are not going to be easy to come by out in the Iowa Capitol this weekend.
How about hotel rooms and seats at a bar? I don't see Des Moines as the bumbling metropolis to put this together, a bustling metropolis, rather, to get this all handled. They're going to do a nice job. It's Midwestern hospitality and all that, but we're not going to talk Chamber of Commerce stuff this morning. It's all about hoops as the NCAA tournament kicks off tonight. Dayton will be the host for the first two games tonight and the first two tomorrow. The first four is in action. The tournament proper kicks off on Thursday morning, but we always kind of look back to look forward, and the grumbling from many Indiana fans has been, geez, we're the Big Ten regular season champions. How in the heck did we get a number 5 seed? And I say, well, the NCAA tournament committee doesn't just look at the Big Ten regular season. They look at the first game you play and the last game you play and all points in between. Is that accurate or fair, or did the Indiana Hoosiers get a raw deal on being number 5?
Well, I think you can probably point to some problems with Indiana's resume, the loss to Maui, the Penn State loss. I can't tell you whether or not beating Michigan would have gotten them into the top 4 line or not, but I would point out they're hardly the only Big Ten team, I think, with reason to complain. I'm not really sure how you leave Michigan State off the one line.
Well, isn't that the whole point? If the whole league's complaining, that means the tournament committee didn't see them in the same eyes that the league saw themselves.
I guess maybe more the point I'm trying to make is that it might be a reflection of Indiana's record or a reflection of Indiana's schedule or a reflection of Indiana's resume. It might honestly be more so a reflection simply of the way the committee viewed the league this year, clearly not very highly.
And I agree with that. And also, as we pointed out last night when Dave and I were talking in the zone, the SEC found the same kind of problems. Texas A&M, their regular season champion, was just a 3. And Kentucky, their postseason champion, was just a 4. And if you saw the train wreck that was the NCAA tournament selection show, Charles Barkley has been nothing but a disaster on that program since they've done this crossover. And it just made you wonder when he came out and said, hey, watch out for the Pac-12. This is a conference that I get to watch because I live on the West Coast. You just wondered if somebody whispered that in his ear on Sunday afternoon, because the Pac-12 and the Big 12 were the conferences that seemed to get tons of respect, and the SEC and Big 10 weren't.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, and John Calipari, I think, somewhat fairly said on Selection Sunday, said, it feels like sometimes it's a moving target, that the one year we hear about road wins, one year we hear about RPI, one year we hear about this or that or the other thing. And the NCAA has tried its best, to its credit, I think, to make the selection process more transparent, to bring in, for that mock selection exercise, media from all over the country once a year, and it's usually in February. But at the same time, somebody is always, I think, going to feel like their conference was not well regarded enough, or at the same time there's plenty of mid-majors out there that probably raised their eyebrows at Tulsa getting into the field over Monmouth or somebody like that. So it's kind of par for the course. There's going to be winners, there's going to be losers on Selection Sunday. And Calipari was also the one that said, you got to win the games wherever you go, wherever you're seated.
And he's exactly right. And Calipari does this all every year because he tries to take the heat off his team. That's not a surprise. He's learned that from some of the greats over history. But he's upset. Indiana's kind of feels a little bit disrespected. So if everybody's disrespected, really the playing field's level.
Yeah. Well, and again, I mean, look, Tom Izzo also, because obviously people rush to ask Izzo what the about Michigan State being a number two seed after the Big Ten tournament final on Sunday, and you know, he basically said, "Look, if you're a good number one, you're going to have to play in a good number two. If you're a good number two, you're going to have to play a number one. You know, I mean, you're going to have to go through these teams to get to the Final Four anyway." Obviously, yes, a number one would have an easier route, certainly to the second weekend.
Exactly.
But then a number five would, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, at this time of year, the math, as complicated as it can seem, is actually pretty simple.
Yeah, and I agree with you, too. I think there's simplicity of it. Take the decision out of the tournament committee's hands as much as you can as possible. Michigan State had some injury problems that bothered them earlier in the year. Michigan State also lost at home to Nebraska when Denzel Valentine was playing. Those are things that when you have a tightly bunched up 5, 6, 7 teams right here, you have to split hairs and point out those warts, and that's a wart. So if you have one of those, that might not help you in the end. Zach Osterman's our guest this morning. He is the beat writer for the Indiana Hoosiers at the Indianapolis Star. The Hoosiers' Big Ten tournament didn't end the way they wanted. They did not take any of that late-season momentum into the game against Michigan on Friday. Sitting back now, we're almost, 5 days out of that. Reflecting back on that, was there anything that grabbed your attention where you said, geez, I don't know if that's going to be what the Hoosiers need moving forward, or was it a case of it wasn't their day last Friday?
You know, I'd be worried about some of the defensive breakdowns, the inability to protect the rim against the Michigan team that, frankly, didn't have a ton of business really being as good around the rim. I think they were 20 of 35 on two-point shots against Indiana last Friday. That's a concern, because that's harkening back to some of the defensive struggles we saw Indiana go through for the first month and a half of the season. You know, the turnovers, you got the sense that maybe when things weren't going well, Indiana was just pressing a little bit. I think that's something that this team can sort of solve within itself, I guess, and maybe there's a better way to put that. But I think you kind of take my meaning. If you're Indiana, I mean, look, what were they, 4 of 17,
I think,
from behind the three-point line? You just have to figure that you're a better three-point shooting team than that, and you'll find your range next game. You know, they're just, every once in a while, they're not going to fall. And maybe that affected Indiana's confidence a little bit. Maybe Indiana doesn't press so much, commit so many turnovers if it sees those shots falling. I think that the really concerning thing to me would be that defense, particularly as you're getting ready to play the Chattanooga team that likes to attack downhill, and then certainly if you get past Chattanooga, you're going to be facing a Kentucky team that will be very, very tough to keep away from the rim.
Yeah, let's start with Indiana's defense against Michigan and the Wagner kid, Wagner, the composer. This wasn't Irvin and Walton combining for 47 points here. These were guys spread across the play and were getting at Indiana. 20-35, that's a pretty high percentage from two. But what does Indiana need to do differently? Is this the time of the year where you put in the new defense, or is this where you quote play quote unquote harder, or is it really a case of Indiana's offense struggling? Because I think when they shoot the ball, teams have to get out of their comfort zone and chase. And Michigan, being the biggest lead the Hoosiers had, just 5 points, Michigan really never had to get uncomfortable in that game.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably something to that, and, you know, just in the same way that football can work sometimes. If you've got a high-powered offense, then you can control the game by dictating its terms. And if you're scoring fast and quick and a lot, then all of a sudden your opponent maybe is the one that's going to feel that faster, or is going to sort of feel sped up, feel that added sense of urgency. And there's probably something to some of that. And then, frankly, I don't think you install anything new defensively. I think you look at a guy like Colin Hartman I think you get Robert Johnson healthy, and you know, we'll see what another week has done for Indiana, because there's an argument to be made that absent maybe Yogi Ferrell, he's Indiana's best perimeter defender, and Indiana was having to get very creative with what it was doing without him defensively. But I think that you also just look at some guys and say, look, Colin Hartman, you know, you can defend Jared Utoff, you can defend some of the better players in this league. You've gone up against Jake Layman you know, you're good enough to do this. You had a bad day. I mean, everybody had a bad day together. Let's not let that bad day follow us to Des Moines, because we know we can be better than this, and Indiana can be better than this. And I think that's, on the one hand, you know, maybe it's fair to worry what was wrong. Is it something that's not going to go away so easily? On the other hand, I do think it's fair to say, look, you know, everybody has a bad day. We'd rather have our bad day in the Big Ten tournament and really use it as motivation going into the NCAA tournament. I don't know. I guess we're going to probably find out which one fits Indiana most.
And Zach Osterman's our guest this morning. He's a beat writer for the Indianapolis Star at Zach Osterman, where you can see all of his work. And speaking of the Hoosiers in the NCAA tournament, there can't be another game where it just doesn't work for them. That's not how it works. We know it's one and done. We know that's where the pressure comes in. And part of me, after going back and looking again, I saw hesitation. Guys usually catching the ball in open spots, not taking the shot or knocking it down. It looked like Indiana thinking a lot when they were catching the ball, what to do in the end of the game situation. It didn't seem like they had that confidence. What happened to that confidence that we saw maybe at Iowa and at Maryland wrapping up the season? Again, does that just go back to the one bad day theory?
Maybe. And again, maybe it goes back to some degree. I mean, I've said before, I think Indiana is a confidence team. I think that they need to see things going well for them, that when they see a shot, when they see the threes go down, they think, all right, everything's working. Or when they see a team really rush and make mistakes because they're kind of getting up into them defensively. And then obviously, as good as Indiana is in transition, turnovers turn into points so much faster. I mean, you'll look at points off turnovers numbers just live in games, and Indiana is nearly always outscoring its opponents in that category. When they see those things working, they just kind of get that juice naturally. When they don't, it's kind of been a mixed bag as to whether or not they've been able to kind of dig deep. I mean, obviously they had some games early in the season against lesser opponents like Rutgers and Minnesota where they really were able to kind of dig in. I would argue there were points in time against, certainly a little bit against Michigan in Ann Arbor, certainly at Iowa, where maybe you could say things weren't going great and they really kind of strapped in and just sort of pulled themselves up. But overall, I've also seen moments where, like the Michigan game in Indianapolis, where those things weren't going great, and that really sort of seemed to drag Indiana down as a whole. I think they've got to figure out, if there is a way to figure out this late in the season, you know, just kind of a foolproof way to break them out of that kind of, just the sort of mental slumps, because that's something that will cripple a team this time of year.
And the other angle you can look at, you can almost directly tie three-point shooting into their losses. For the most part, they did escape a couple times not shooting it well, but two of those were against Minnesota, who, just to be frank, doesn't have the talent Indiana does. Indiana shot 2 of 18 at Assembly Hall and I think 8 of 27 at Williams, but found a way to win those games. But when they played Penn State, again, didn't shoot it very well from the three-point line, kind of heavy on turnovers. Their last loss when they went to Michigan State, we know what happened there. And against Michigan, is this team that tied to the three-point shot that makes good days great days or makes bad days really bad days?
I'm not really sure that they are. I mean, I think what they are is, again, tied to needing to the confidence of seeing those shots go down, but I think that confidence can come from other places. I think it comes more often from three-point shooting simply because that's something that Indiana can do so prolifically. I don't necessarily think Indiana, you know, nailed on needs to hit X number of three-pointers to win the game, like 12 or 14 or 15. I think more what it is, Indiana just needs to feel good about itself. This is very much a rhythm team, very much a team that likes to feel like it's in control of a game. And, you know, if they had, you know, just crazy pressure defense all over the floor and pressed and forced turnovers and all that stuff, and I'm not saying they should, I'm just saying if they had that in their locker, then I think that would kind of be the thing where maybe they drew their most strength or their most confidence from. But I think that just for this team, three-point shooting is important largely because it's something they do well. I don't think it's something where you say if Indiana shoots the three, they win. If they don't hit threes, they lose. I just think that if you're talking about a team that needs some confidence, that just needs those jolts of energy, three-point shooting is the easiest way for the team to get it most nights.
And those jolts usually come in three or four packs when the Hoosiers knock down three or four in a row and takes the lead from two to four up to 12 to 14, and that's usually a tough time. You mentioned Indiana as a rhythm team. You mentioned Indiana as getting into a flow. How many NCAA tournament games do you see that are wide open, pedal to the metal, where teams just go at each other? I mean, not too many of them. Isn't it more of a grinded out possession by possession style? What can Indiana do to force that rhythm into their favor against a team like the Mocs? 29-5, they've got some decent wins. We'll talk about those momentarily. But is it on the Hoosiers to make sure they're playing at their pace?
Well, sure, I definitely think it is, and I think the three speed that pace up. If you start knocking down shots and scoring points in bunches, then not many opponents are going to be disciplined enough to sort of slow down and say, you know, don't let them pull us into this. You know, I think
that's
a lot
what Michigan did on Friday.
Well, that's not what Michigan did in Ann Arbor, though.
They're exactly right. They learned from it.
Well, no, I mean, I just like it. You know, it's. I guess what I'm saying is, I would be careful to place too much weight into one game.
Oh, sure.
And well, most opponents, frankly, many of them even this time of year, because they're so much more keenly aware of the stakes, are going to lose focus, are going to lose poise a little bit. And then at the same time, I'd also tell you, you know, this first weekend of games, if you see Chattanooga on Thursday and then provided you win Kentucky on Saturday, you're talking about two teams that I don't think are going to have much trouble running with you. I mean, those are, I don't think Chattanooga plays at amazing pace, but they certainly don't want to play slow. And neither does Kentucky. So, you know, I know what you're saying, and I think that's really usually down more to shots not falling than to teams intentionally slowing down. But I also think that you're just as likely as not to find a team that'll run with you, that'll gun with you, as you are to find one that really wants to just sort of kill things.
Yeah, and it seems like in the last 5 minutes of these games, too, with everything that's on the line, things are going to slow down tremendously, and the team that executes on the half court defensively, offensively, will be handling the day. And the best way not to get into that last 5 minutes of nitty-gritty is have a really good 35 minutes leading into it. Zach Osterman is our guest this morning. He checks in from the Indianapolis Star as we get ready for IU and the Chattanooga Mocs. The Mocs are 29-5, and they've had some, I guess from a Southern Conference point of view, some very impressive wins this year.
Yeah, they beat Georgia, Illinois, Dayton in the non-conference now.
And where they won those games was important as well.
Yes, but it's also important to note, I don't remember, they had the preseason Southern Conference Player of the Year, and Casey Jones, I believe is his name, and I cannot remember if he was available for the Dayton win. He was available for both the Georgia and Illinois wins. And
the Dayton win was December 12th, if that helps you.
I think that's right around the time he got hurt, and he's been hurt since.
So they go and win at Dayton without their best players, what you're telling me?
I'm telling you, I'm not sure if he played in that game or not. Is mostly what I'm telling you. So the point I'm trying to make is that there was a dynamic to those teams that that probably isn't really there anymore. Now, that's not to discount a team that's won 29 games, won 15 games in this conference for the second year in a row, clearly has the confidence to play with and beat high-major teams.
Casey Jones did not play in that game.
Did not play in
I have the box score in front of me. He did not play in that game for the Mocs that day.
So, and this is also a team, too, that has been a pretty consistent winner for the last 3 or 4 years. Actually, it's generally one of the better teams annually in the Southern Conference. If you look at, I mean, mid-majors a lot of times kind of rise and fall. But if you look at just the breadth of their history, they won a lot of conference titles in the last 20, 25 years. I think they've been to 3 NCAA tournaments in the last 7 years. I believe they won at least a share of their league title last year. They did not get to the NCAA tournament. This is obviously Matt McCall's first year in Chattanooga. Will Wade was his predecessor. Will Wade is a Shaka Smart disciple who took over for Shaka Smart at VCU and Smart left for Texas. So it's a team that is comfortable with pressure defense, both half court and full court. And as you said, I mean, they're not going to be afraid of an opponent of this caliber. At the same time, have they seen a team that can potentially score the way that Indiana can? Especially when, you know, if your DNA is built on pressure defense, but you can't force the turnovers. I mean, that's kind of the big key, I think, for Indiana. They're going to get pressured a little bit. I don't know how much Chattanooga will press full court, per se, because that sometimes is a recipe for disaster against Indiana, as efficient as they are in transition. But even if it's that half-court pressure defense, if you can run your stuff, get some points, not commit a ton of turnovers, is this team prepared to score with you? I'm not really sure that's the case. So it's not so much maybe dictating tempo as it is, you know, be rewarding the team that makes fewer mistakes, whether it's a team that is very comfortable pressuring and pressing or a team that is frankly just the more talented of the two in Indiana.
Zach Osterman's our guest this morning. We're talking Chattanooga Mox, Indiana Hoosiers, 7:10 Thursday, CBS, NCAA Tournament. Starting off proper today, the first four games. We'll have them for you right here on the airwaves starting at 6 o'clock tonight with all your pregame coverage right here on WGCL. And looking at the Mox kind of resemble what the Hoosiers do when they do it well. When the Mox are playing well, it looks like they're balanced. They don't have one guy that gets 32 and you hope two or three other guys chip in. Everybody's averaging that 12, 11, 13-point range. How do you slow a team down like that? Well, if you're Indiana, you outscore them. I think you're exactly right, because when Indiana's on song, no one catches up with them. How does Indiana get back in that rhythm of making sure everybody gets a touch and we don't fall into ball watching or waiting for Yogi to make something happen?
You know, I mean, I don't know if I have the best answer for that. Again, if I go out and part of me just wants to see Indiana on Thursday, you know, did they just have a weird day in a building that for whatever reason has historically not been very kind to them?
Let me ask you a better question then. Does Troy need to get off to a good Troy start? Does Thomas Bryant need to get to catch and dunk three or four times? Does Yogi need to come out and set the tone? Where do you think this offense gets its kickstart? Where do you think that that generates from?
I think it generates from one of two things. I think, number one, if you knock down some early threes, especially if you kind of get them in the rhythm of the offense, not like a pull-up three. I think those are good for Indiana, and obviously Yogi Ferrell can hit those prolifically. But not just the pull-up three, but can it get the threes and sort of the motion of the offense, you know, feel like its offense is working to free guys up. And the other place is, the other thing is if they can force some turnovers, force some long defensive possessions that end in a rebound and a quick score, then I think they feel like they are controlling the tempo of the game because they're getting stops and then getting out running and scoring really fast from them, that whole sort of defense turning into offense dynamic. I think those are the two things that are really big for this team if you talk about just sort of feeling good early. And certainly feeling like they're in control early, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, but we have seen not some of the hottest starts, but that hasn't bothered this team. Indiana's been slow out of the gate, and they seem to get it figured out. Maybe when that second unit comes in where you see OG and Max and Zeisloft and Yogi and whoever else out there, that's kind of the sometimes when things aren't going well. You saw that lineup at Michigan get things fired up. You saw it at Iowa kind of spark things as well. That depth has to play a big factor against a Chattanooga team I wouldn't guess is as deep as Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, depth is always critical this time of year, and quality depth, the ability to sort of look to your bench and say, you know, do we have game changers on here? Not necessarily guys that can score 15, 18, 20 points in a game, but just can come in and lift the overall mood of the game, can come in and change the tenor of the game, you know, can give you solid rebounding for 4 or 5 minutes, can produce a couple steals, a couple turnovers, whatever it may be. I mean,
change
we've
seen the
it
pace.
All year. I mean, the number of times that a bench player has come in for Indiana and knocked down a couple shots or pulled in a few rebounds and just sort of changed momentum. Yeah, I mean, I think that's as much as anything where you talk about quality depth for Indiana. Indiana can bring guys off the bench that can change the momentum of a game in 4 or 5 minutes, and I think that's something not everybody has this time of year.
People always get a little nervy with the 12-5 quote-unquote upset games. Just a quick history note, there weren't any last year, and that's a streak of one in a row, and we'd like to see that continue this year as well. We're going to get caught up with you tomorrow evening once you land in Des Moines, along with Mike Miller and Alex McCarthy and Joe Smith. We've got a big program for you coming up 5 to 6:30 tomorrow night with the gang live from that. Safe travels, my friend. We appreciate it. We hope you find find a hotel room within 600 miles. And we hope you beat the storm in there today. So be safe, and we'll get caught up with you tomorrow evening.
Sounds good, Glass. Thanks for having me.